papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new...
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we have some folks talking about what's going on in newsrooms and about newsroom decision making. And if I talk really fast, we'll be able to get in all the information that we have this week because we have a lot of great topics. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now with The Upstate American, which you can read on Substack. Here with my colleagues, would y'all introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Judy Patrick, and things are just getting more dire every week we're here.
Thank you, Debbie Downer Judy. This is Barbara Lombardo, former editor at the Saratogian and the Record, currently an adjunct at UAlbany teaching journalism.
That's a good thing to teach. And you, sir?
And this is Miles Reed. I'm Daily Gazette editor, and I also oversee all the papers that we publish in the region, in the Hudson Valley, the Mohawk Valley. And I was here a week ago, and it feels like it's been 2 years of politics and news since then.
Yeah, that's right. Trump time, dog time, it's a long time. So we have to talk this week about a judge who issued a clearly unconstitutional prior restraint. We have to talk about a newspaper that has lost its backbone. And we might get into some of the craziness, the attack on the Associated Press from the White House. But let's talk about a little known issue that people who are outside the world of media may not be aware of, and it has to do with Clarksdale, Mississippi. Clarksdale, Mississippi, which is a little community down there where there has been some controversy because the newspaper published an editorial criticizing the city council for acting apparently illegally by having a closed-door meeting, and that editorial prompted a hullabaloo. What happened next?
You know how many times I've written that story? Like 100. Because the newspaper essentially was calling out the city council for calling a special meeting, not telling anyone, and passing a resolution calling on the state legislature to increase sales tax or a tax that would bring money back to the city so they could pay people more money.
Let's note, by the way, that Mark Mahoney, now the editorial page editor of the Daily Gazette, won a Pulitzer Prize when he was at the Post-Star of Glens Falls for exactly that kind of an editorial. He was taking local governments up there to task, right?
Right, and the issue itself is a solid one. It's an important one. But what is most egregious, which made me fall off my chair when I first read this story, was the fact that a judge said you have to take that information down off your website. I actually still found it, and I'm spreading it around as much as I can.
Oh, good for you, because I wanted to know what was so egregious in this editorial. Of course, they had taken it down, and I couldn't find it. But we need to be accurate in saying that this is incredible that this even happened at all, but that the judge issued a temporary restraining order so that the case is going to be heard next week. The editor of the paper is fighting this, the owner of the paper is fighting this, so they will get to make their case. But the fact that an editorial, I could see city councils far and wide whooping it up, saying, finally, we can stop those unfavorable, terrible lies.
This judge has been on the bench since about 2018. She's a smart woman. She has a degree in chemical engineering from Georgia Tech before she went to law school at the University of Mississippi. Her mom was a judge before her. Her late husband was a lawyer. This is a woman who knows what she's doing. Notwithstanding that, the issue of prior restraint is pretty clearly illegal.
Yeah, it's one of those things that all of us growing up in journalism learned, that prior restraint really was one of those areas where our judicial system has ruled routinely, saying we're not going to allow an enforcement where somebody has to stop publishing it before it actually happens. We all know that there can be lawsuits, of course, after the fact if there's defamation or alleged defamation, but this is a really distressing step. You brought up, Rex, about Mark Mahoney, my colleague. Just 2 days ago, we had a story in Amsterdam where the school transportation contract, a massive contract, was actually switched from a longtime provider, a local one, Brown, to an outside company that had also bid. but we have not had any access to the actual proposals or any of the contracts. And so Mark Mahoney wrote an editorial, and we had it in all of our papers, criticizing the school board, saying, you need to release these. And we have submitted some FOILs. But fortunately, they have not sued us to try to get rid of the editorial. If they do, we will strenuously fight it. And I think that's something maybe our readers don't realize, that this kind of stuff that happened in Mississippi, we get requests all the time from public officials who say, I need you to change that. I need you to take it down. I need you to not do that story. And fortunately, we can resist that as much as possible and be willing to go to court. But this is a terrible trend, and I can't help but think this is part of this national, sort of movement saying, you know what, you don't like what the press is doing? Just sue them, or find some way to remove their teeth.
And the fact of the matter is, let's just be clear about what the law allows. Under Supreme Court precedents, under New York Times v. Sullivan and other cases, there is even, in effect, a right to be wrong. It is perfectly permissible. It is constitutional for people in this country to say what they wish, even if they are non-factual, even if they're lies. Look at Donald Trump, who lies routinely and isn't held to account for it. But even ordinary citizens can something that is their opinion and not be at risk of legal action, except that now we are seeing activated, right, a mindset that let's just go after the media if we don't like what they say.
And that this paper was not wrong. They were not given notice of this meeting, and they offered their opinion about that being a bad decision on the part of the city. So they were not wrong. The judge has just decided, and I think the temporary restraining order took the information down. Again, you can find it in their web archives. And it had already been printed. This is a small local newspaper in Mississippi that tends to skew to the right. It covers local government. It does a good job of it. It's all over the place in terms of community events. The problem now is they're going to have to pay a lawyer to fight to get this thing back up and to establish their right to criticize government and to hold them accountable. This is what we do.
There's a lot of concerns that are tied to this. You don't want to get sucked into the conversation of whether it was an egregious, whether it was incorrect, what exactly was the content of it. That's something that, as Miles says, could be adjudicated later if somebody said that it was full of falsehoods. But this looked like, from reading about it, that the city hadn't told the press and the rest of the public that there was going to be a meeting, and the editorial criticized them for that. Now the city is saying, well, it was an oversight on the part of their clerk and they apologized for it. That might be the case, and maybe they'd want to add a line, modify their editorial, and they can say, this might have been a one-shot oversight, but still, this is an important thing. We can't slide, but to throw the whole thing out the window. So it's a big enough issue affecting this one little town that it is a national issue. The New York Times jumped in on it, and I want to criticize their coverage for pussyfooting around in their attempt to, I guess, balance, where they're saying that, the judge orders the editorial removed, and their subhead and their lead says it's a move that has alarmed press advocates. I mean, give me a break. That's such a weak-kneed phrase to throw in there. Oh, some people are concerned that, this is alarming to everyone.
No
it
doubt.
It should be.
And there is, of course, precedent for this right down there in Mississippi. There is a lawsuit pending against Mississippi Today, filed by the former governor. Mississippi Today won the Pulitzer Prize for its investigation into misspending of COVID relief welfare funds. We had Anna Wolf, who won that Pulitzer Prize, on this program a little more than a year ago, because it pointed out, Mississippi Today in straightforward reporting that took a lot of documentation, pointed out how funds had been misspent, including funds to build a volleyball court at Ole Miss, where the quarterback Brett Favre's daughter was playing volleyball. I'm sure that's irrelevant, he said sarcastically. But I think that this notion of suing the media when it has something that you don't like published is gaining so much traction these days, and it puts us especially at risk when we have the example at the White House of this kind of action.
Yes,
right?
Well, when you're being punished for allegedly not telling the truth, what media outlets are reporting that the president has stated as fact that Zelensky is a dictator and that Ukraine started the war? Those are indisputable falsehoods.
Yes.
They are lies. So should we not be held accountable if we publish those
lies? Right, it's like Putin in Russia. He liked to call what he was doing as a special military action, and he outlawed the use of the word war in connection with that. And people could go to jail if they called what people did. Yeah, people did. Is this where we're headed? What we have to do is stand up every time. I mean, call it out when we see it and really lobby in support of free speech and protecting the rights of the press to write, to criticize, to ask the questions, and to probe. So many things are going sideways.
Unfortunately, of course, this comes at a time when the public estimation of the media is at a low point. Trust in the media to generally do the right thing is at about 20%. For Donald Trump, it's actually higher than that. For Congress, it's even higher than that these days. So we are not in a strong position to be able to argue on behalf of the rights that really protect all Americans. This is not just for people in the media. It's about everybody. The Associated Press issue, of course, that was just mentioned a couple of times, the notion that the Associated Press is refusing to use the words Gulf of America that Donald Trump decreed should be changed, should be used instead of Gulf of Mexico, which has been in place for 400 years. And now the AP, which is about as straightforward a reporting organization as exists, has been barred from the White House and Mar-a-Lago and from the president's flights. I don't see how that gets resolved without a lawsuit, right?
Right, and I think the AP expects to file a lawsuit to maintaining that this is a violation of the First Amendment. They are, again, the bedrock of the national media landscape. I'm sorry to see the other news organizations don't have their back. I think you need to have their back. We thought at first that it was just going to be one press conference or one gaggle or whatever in there. And we sitting here, we'll all agree, you don't have to be at every press conference to do a good job of reporting the news. But for the AP, they provide basic coverage. They are part of the press. What do they call it?
The press corps.
They're a basic part. I mean, they've thrown the mainstream press out of offices at the Pentagon. I mean, these are almost perks. And again, real editors and real reporters sitting here saying, oh, well, you know, if you're a really good reporter, you don't have to be sitting in the office next to the press secretary.
I have some questions about this whole Gulf of America, Gulf of Mexico thing.
It's the Gulf of Mexico.
So one is, I wonder how the media would have reacted if it was President Obama making a change. And so President Obama made the change from McKinley to
Denali.
Was it during Obama?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
And it was part of the United States, so it's not kind of the same thing.
And Trump has turned it back, and so all the media are going along with Trump's, notwithstanding the fact that Senator Murkowski and others, everybody, the general opinion in Alaska is we don't want to go back to Mount McKinley. We like Denali.
Right. So, but some of it, I wonder, is whether the reaction is because of who it's coming from. Another is that it's a totally outrageous, unnecessary, horrible thing.
Provocation.
Yes. And what I haven't seen, and Judy, since you found the archive of that editorial, maybe you have seen this, is how is the Associated Press actually writing this in stories that refer to the Gulf of Mexico or the Gulf of America? Are they saying the Gulf of Mexico? And then if I was the editor, then I'd be saying the Gulf of Mexico, and then in a clause saying which Trump has renamed as Gulf of America.
In stories about the controversy, they are doing that.
I don't just mean the controversy. Yeah. I mean all the time.
No.
Because around the country, most local newspapers are using the Associated Press service. So now what's happening at local newspapers all over? You know, what are you doing at the Gazette? You're back to AP, are you changing it every time?
No. So this is a big issue. We are sticking with using it as the Gulf of Mexico for now.
Because that's AP.
That's their style right now. We don't, you know, 100% abide by AP style. We have some slight changes that we've made, especially if it affects like some local regional issue. But for now, we go with the AP style book, and it's a hot discussion
so
in our newspaper.
If you're having a story where somebody is making a comment about the Gulf, and they said such and such about the Gulf of, are you going to call it Gulf of America or Gulf of, if it's a staff-written story, how are you going to report
it? So that hasn't come up yet, but I think on that specific thing, the way we always try to, even if somebody says something that's maybe factually incorrect, try to fact-check it in the story or in brackets. But when it comes up, you know, if it's a Republican lawmaker, and we have some in our region that I'm sure have adopted Gulf of America, that we will quote them, but then clarify it. But for now, we're sticking with AP. AP is just a fabulous news organization, nonpartisan. It is reputable. Every journalist who has worked in the business recognizes it as just the leading wire service in the world right now. And until we see further, we're going to stick with what their style is.
You know, and as a practical matter, unless there's a big hurricane, you don't see a lot of Gulf of Mexico references in news stories.
Well, and you have your Sharpie, which can allocate places of hurricanes as to where they go, which is whether they come to the Gulf or not, of course.
Well, do you think that that the AP in its stories should indicate that they can call it Gulf of Mexico?
No, I think they should just
ignore the Gulf of America part.
Yeah, I think that's not relevant to the stories about, say, the weather or anything. I think it's referred to as the Gulf of Mexico because that's what it is. The president's declaration has nothing to do with the reality of how places are named. You know, there is actually an organization called International Hydrographic Organization that oversees mapping and charting and even the naming of some water organizations.
And there are places that have two names.
There are places,
yes.
Yeah, like the Rio Grande River is called Rio Bravo in Mexico. So call it what you will within your country, but the AP is a global organization and it needs to abide by what it's called everywhere except in, you know, some selected chambers of right-wing echoes of Donald Trump.
And the reason we're making a big deal about this is because it's just the first blow.
Yes.
What will happen next? What will he order that we start saying? Or what will he order that we in the press do going forward? We do what we think is right. We do what makes sense and what's logical and what's legal.
And what is fair, honest, accurate, and scientific. I totally agree with you that this is him throwing down a gauntlet or cross this line. Let's see if you cross this line. And this sounds like an unrelated topic, but if the Trump administration says there are only two genders, or they like to say there are only two sexes, so are we going to be prohibited in the press from referring to non-binary people and transgender people, or saying what they say and then having a clause saying contrary to scientific evidence? And
yeah,
it's...
I think that's quite relevant. That is exactly the kind of thing that is likely to be pretty close on the horizon if Trump is successful in this. And of course, what's stunning is the silence from anyone on his side in the Congress.
And that's why I think it's important that we don't bend to these kind of pressures. And this is not, you know, a first time we've experienced this. Occasionally, I'll get people who call and say, well, you had a story about my conviction. And since then, as part of the Clean Slate Act, I've been cleared of that. And my name is no longer in the database. And they say, that means you need to remove it. And we don't necessarily do that because we are trying to, you know, retain a historical look at what has happened in our communities. Not to say that, you know, we don't get requests all the time, that once in a while, if it turns out somebody was just totally falsely accused of a crime and there's a jury verdict that says such, we might consider it. But the example I used this week when a caller called about the Gulf of Mexico, and I've had a bunch of calls, and what I said was, and I was trying to think on my feet, and I said, you know, if Mayor Sheehan in Albany today decided to start calling it Fort Orange, Albany, instead of Albany, I said, we would still call it Albany. We might make a reference to the fact that she wants to call it Fort Orange, but we're not officially going to change it. Not to say that at somewhere down the road, if everybody gets on board and the legislature decides to do it, we do it. But not just on one public official saying we want to do this. We have a broader view of things and more of a historical sense of what's going on.
Man, it's fascinating to me that you're getting calls on this.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, and it's interesting because we brought up Mark Mahoney. He sent me a note yesterday, and the note was, the subject of the email was, can I get an extra page for opinion? And then I jumped into it, and he said, we are getting flooded with letters to the editor all about Trump, you know, both sides of it, too. And so he points that out. So the answer was no, because our news hole is continues to struggle at times.
But that's what people are going to be looking. The people that are still getting your print edition are looking for that. They're looking for their voices.
Absolutely.
Make space for them.
And we're going to try to. We always try to. We just couldn't give it to them. He wanted it today.
Less AP story.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant. It's print. Who cares?
But you're putting all their comments, though, getting online?
All the comments get online,
okay,
even if
right,
we don't
I'm,
get
I'm
them in. He's great at doing that. And it takes a lot lot of curating, because if it's something totally, you know, off the wall that we know is factually not correct, we do not print it. But for the most part...
So you wouldn't print a letter from President Trump, in other words? Okay. Moving onward.
All right. But now there are newspapers who are making decisions to kowtow, notably the Washington Post. Let's be clear that this is a commercial decision, not a journalistic decision. And notwithstanding that, let's understand, there was apparently a $115,000 contract signed for the Washington Post to run what's called a wrap. That is a little four-page wrap around the outside of the paper. That was paid for by the advocacy group Common Cause in collaboration with the Southern Poverty Law Center Action Fund. And this $115,000 special wrap said on the front, "Fire Elon Musk." It says, the Constitution only allows for one president at a time. Call your senators. Tell them it's time that Donald Trump fire Elon Musk. And then it's followed by the URL, firemusk.org. This contract existed, but the Post then decided not to honor it. Now, surely the Post has a right to do that. So what's the controversy about this?
I mean, I was surprised that they did it, actually. I just think it sets a really bad precedent. I mean, I think the media, especially today, we have to make a big effort to, you know, if it's a paid advertisement, if it is not factually incorrect, to allow it as much as possible. And, you know, you can't help but think that this is something that's coming down from Bezos, and it's a direction that they seem to be going. And again, I think they've created more of a controversy that was unnecessary, because I think they could have run it. And I think most people would see it and say, you know, that's just a wrap. And we reject ads from time to time. I think we've all probably done that at some point. If it's a political ad that is, we know it is not factually correct, or if it's a salacious business. So the media can do that. But this seemed to me a surprise that they would do it.
You mean you think that they would have gotten less attention, but they're really concerned about a single reader, aren't they? Don't you think that the Post publisher, who I'm sure this is a publisher's decision, it went that far.
It's $100,000.
Because they're turning around, they're turning away money, so yeah.
Yeah, that would be, but I mean, it wouldn't even be the ad director, it wouldn't be a vice president,
right.
It's the publisher who would say, yeah, we don't really want to tick off the president with this and get ourselves in the crosshairs the way the Associated Press is at this point. So maybe it's actually a step on behalf of the journalists for the publisher to turn this down. Is that possible? But doesn't that show what peril we're in at this point?
It's not like they don't run political ads with political points of view, because they do. There have been plenty of those used as an example of, well, you ran this, why won't you run this? The ad contract was signed. It was ready to go. And it's not like the Southern Poverty Law Center and Common Cause are far-left groups. They're responsible organizations that have long fought for civil rights in this country. So the fact that they accepted it, rejected it, I was just disappointment after disappointment after disappointment from the Washington Post, even though I did read up my subscription.
We've stopped being surprised about this, although this was a new level of surprise on top of all the other. An editorial ready to go, that gets quashed. An ad that's ready to go, that gets quashed. I wonder what their rationale would be and whether they would have consistency if somebody was trying to take an ad showing migrants saying, get rid of these criminals, get the criminals out of our country. I wouldn't want to see that wrapped around my newspaper front.
You would be upset about it.
I would be very upset, and I would urge my publisher and owners, who I was always fighting with, this shouldn't run at all. And if it must run, it should run inside, not on the front page of our newspaper. Because it becomes the voice, even though it's an ad, it's taken as the opinion of the newspaper because you've chosen to put it on your front page. You've given up your front page for it.
We would often get criticism about this when I was the editor of the Times Union about gun advertising. You know, firearms are legal in this society, and so ads for guns would frequently run in the paper. And we would always answer to people, yeah, we accept ads for what is legal. But notwithstanding that, we would get criticism from anti-gun forces. So it goes around each way. By the way, there is no hesitancy on the part of Donald Trump and Elon Musk to criticize the Washington Post or anybody else. They have quite specifically singled out individuals. Eugene Robinson, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist,
for
example. Oh, my
God, that was horrible.
He should be fired immediately. Calls him pathetic, radical left.
What bothers me more than that being a terrible opinion is that It puts a bullseye on the backs of every journalist who is so named.
So we need to draw an end to the program. I just have to mention that, by the way, the leading sponsor in the United States House of Representatives of the bill to defund public broadcasting is Congresswoman Claudia Tenney.
Oh, New York.
Of New York.
Oh,
so just FYI, folks, there is a local aspect right in this listening area of what's going on. We might get to that in the next show. But we're out of time for this one. You're going to have to come back for next week's Media Project, folks, to hear more. Miles Reed, editor of the Daily Gazette. Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. Judy Patrick, former editor of the Gazette, and I'm Rex Smith. We are grateful to our producer, David Gassina, for getting us this far. And to you folks for joining us this week. We hope to come back again next week for The Media Project.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and editor and vice president of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.